Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of two, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Buddy, we got a great one today. You know, for a change, David Axelrod joins me again. Last time David was on the podcast, we did it with Cecile Richards, the longtime head of Planned Parenthood, a few days before the 2022 midterm. And David was very pessimistic about that one and thought there would be a red wave. Cecile predicted that Democrats would do way better than the polls were showing because of the Dobbs decision and the issue of democracy. I took the courageous, sensible position and said that I didn't know what was going to happen, but I added that I didn't trust what I was hearing in the polls and that Cecile just might be right, and she was. I was spot on. Biden had one of the four best midterms since and including the 1934 FDR midterm. George W. Bush picked up seats in 2002 after he decided to go to war in Iraq and Afghanistan after 9/11. John Kennedy won seats in the House and the Senate in 1962, just days after resolving the Cuban Missile Crisis without a nuclear war. And Democrats had a great midterm in 1934 after FDR had started the New Deal and saved the country, and then Biden. So, W, JFK, FDR, Biden. Of course, that was 2022, and this is now. And we've been getting some conflicting messages about the 2024 election. And David Axelrod, my guest, you might well be aware, sounded an alarm that what he saw in the New York Times Siena Battleground States polls raised an issue that couldn't be ignored, Biden's age. Now, David acknowledges that Biden has achieved an amazing amount of good stuff in his first term, getting COVID shots into the arms of a couple hundred million Americans in pretty short order, the biggest infrastructure bill since the Eisenhower administration, an almost $400 billion investment in addressing climate change, finally allowing Medicare to negotiate with pharmaceuticals to get the cost down for seniors, including $35 a month on insulin. Real accomplishments. And I would argue that Biden has led the coalition behind Ukraine against Russia in a brilliant way, and now sorting through a complex and heartbreaking war in the Middle East. And you may disagree with exactly how this has been playing out in Gaza. How can there be absolute agreement on exactly how to deal with this impossible situation? But you can see the president and his team working with countries in the region to try to prevent this from spreading into a regional conflict. Yeah, but does he have the energy of a Donald Trump? Well, what kind of energy are we talking about? And how much energy does it take to be Trump, really? He gets up, whatever home it is, Mar-a-Lago, Bedminster, Trump Tower, watches Fox and Friends in his bathrobe while they show edited clips of Biden landing on a foreign tarmac and asking an aide, "Where am I going?" And Trump loves these clips because they edit the shit out of them and make Biden look disoriented and senile. Here's the thing, though. When I was in the Senate, I would ask my staff where I was going about 9-10 times a day. Why? Because I wanted to know where I was going. When the president asks an aide, "Where am I going?" what that usually means is, what microphone do I use, or what's the right camera angle, or which of these people I've never met before am I supposed to shake hands with first? See, the president's a busy man, and I'm willing to bet that when Trump was president, he probably asked this question a lot, but MSNBC and CNN didn't make a lot a lot of hay at it because they knew it was trivial. Anyway, Trump gets dressed, puts on the extra long tie the way that Trump likes it for some reason. Maybe he thinks it makes him look thinner and sends a subliminal message, which is, I have a longer tie than you do. He gets into his private elevator and rides down to the lobby, gets out, walks 20 feet to a waiting limousine. He rides in the limo, where Fox has already been turned on, calls Steve Doocy to compliment him on that morning show, especially the funny clips. He gets to Teterboro. He's driven out onto the tarmac, about 10 feet from the Trump jet. Once on board, he sits down in a seat. And since he's worked up quite an appetite due to all this activity, he immediately is served a cheeseburger with fries. On the plane, he watches more Fox and makes another call complimenting Sean Hannity on last night's show and runs a few nicknames by a worshipful aide like Crooked Joe and Beijing Biden. More Fox before he lands in Altoona, Pennsylvania, where he gets off the plane, walks down some steps this time, goes another 10 feet into a waiting car, door open, and rides to a Trump rally where 15,000 MAGA fans are waiting for him. He takes a short walk up some stairs, and boom, he's on stage. Okay, so far, not a lot of energy expended. Really no more than you or I would use up taking a shower or walking to the mailbox. But once he's out there on the stage in front of cheering Trumpers, that's where, and I've got to admit, he does display a certain amount of energy. But see, it's energy that he's getting from the crowd. Because the thing about Trump is that he is an energy vampire. In order to be energetic, he must suck energy from his hapless victims. And he pretty much admits this. He likes to say that he's a performer. I get energy, my energy from you. Like Count Dracula, who had the power of hypnotism, Trump has a bunch of tricks for drawing energy from the crowd, like whipping them up with the brand new epithets, Beijing Biden. Each crowd is like a giant focus group. And since he absorbs their energy, he learns to repeat whatever they cheer for. And he loves doing it. And nothing he says is too ridiculous. He talks for an hour and a half, which would require a lot of energy if what you were saying makes sense, is fact-checked, and if you choose your words carefully, if it had a beginning, middle, and an end, and wasn't just all middle. But what Trump says isn't accurate or carefully phrased or finely wrought. It's the exact opposite of that. It's flooding the zone with shit, as Steve Bannon coined it, watching the audience devour the shit with gusto, and getting the energy off that to store what shit played well with the crowd. Crowds coming to support their guy will learn things like how Mexico built the wall and paid for it, or how when he arrived at the White House, the Obama administration had run out of ammunition. He's like an addict. He has to give his audience bigger and bigger lies in order to get high. But he may be getting to the point where his lies are so extreme that he can't go any further. Like, lately he's been saying he will end the war in Ukraine in a day, and the Mideast in two. And then he delivers his new big line, the big one, which he's been saying over and over and over.
I'm the only candidate who can make this promise. I will prevent, and very easily, World War III, very easily. And you're going to have World War III, by the way. You're going to have World War III. If something doesn't happen fast, you're going to have World War III.
This is the ultimate Trump. Only I can prevent World War III. If you believe that only Trump can prevent World War III, you kind of have to support him, right? I mean, I would support him because World War III would mean the death of you, your family, all your loved ones, everyone you know, everyone they know, people you can't stand, your pets, adorable pets from nature documentaries, all life on Earth. So maybe this is as far as he can go. He's finally found the bottom. But the implication is that Biden can't stop World War III because he doesn't have the energy to do it. Meanwhile, while Trump's saying all this stuff, Biden is on the phone with Secretary of State Blinken, who is meeting with the Sheikh of Qatar trying to prevent Hezbollah from attacking Israel. I'll grant you that conducting delicate diplomacy on the phone doesn't sound like it takes a lot of energy. It only requires decades of experience, sound judgment. I know, boring. So ironically, even though it's Biden who has been working tirelessly to prevent World War III or merely a horrible regional war, you don't see it. You don't see that energy. He doesn't prevent World War III the way Superman would, by flying in the air and grabbing hold of a supersonic nuclear missile and directing it so that it crashes harmlessly into the sun. That would take a lot of energy, and everyone could see it. So Donald Trump, on a net energy basis, gets much more energy from the crowd than they get from him. And here's how I can prove that. At most Trump rallies, about 40% of the audience is gone before the end. It takes energy to listen to Trump. And everyone leaves knowing even less than when they came. But they leave happy. They leave Trump fans. He's done all kinds of amazing things they didn't know about, like preventing World War III, but now they're getting sleepy. And as for Trump, he tries to finish strong, maybe by saying something about how the media is corrupt or how the 2020 election was stolen, or maybe he brings back the Beijing Biden line if it worked the first time and the second and the third time. He takes the plane home, gets back to his apartment, puts his bathrobe back on, orders another cheeseburger, and flips Fox back on. Meanwhile, Biden is in the Situation Room trying to negotiate a humanitarian pause and a hostage exchange in Gaza, using the Saudis as an intermediary. Now, a lot of you may say that's not really fair. Biden's the president. That's what he's supposed to be doing. But the thing is that when Trump was president, he didn't do any of that. Instead, he sat in front of the TV in his bathroom and tweeted crazy things that got him booted off Twitter. Well, I guess I'm in a bad mood. But not because we don't have a great one today. You know, for a change, David Axelrod. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
David, thank you.
Sure.
Sure. You're in New York. You were doing the debate last night.
Yes.
What do you call it? The silver medal debate?
The silver medal debate, yeah.
And who won the silver medal last night? This is the Republican debate.
Yeah. Well, I think Donald Trump probably won it.
Again.
I think for the third consecutive time. Uh-huh. You know, he made a clever calculation that if he didn't show up, he would not be the principal target, and the audience would be smaller, and he's got a lead, and he's gonna. And that was a shrewd calculation. But of the contestants who were there, Also, for the third straight time, Nikki Haley probably was the standout performer. I actually thought Chris Christie had his best debate, but it's obviously in vain. You know, DeSantis did a better job than he has. He's a strange character, and that comes through even on a good night. But neither he nor Haley did what they needed to do, which was kind of put the other one away to some degree. They're fighting desperately for the silver medal.
Is the silver medal for her the Veep nod? I mean, is that...
I you know, that's a calculation that she would have to make, because Nikki Haley's 51 years old. You either elevate or diminish yourself in these processes. She has elevated herself. The question is whether she wants to attach herself to Trump, which has not exactly been a career builder for anyone else, or whether she wants to wait for the post-Trump era and take a gamble that we still have a democracy.
Well, the post-Trump era, hopefully, he'll have been a one-term president, and so democracy will still be here if Trump doesn't win again.
Right, of course. But, you know, one way or the other, the question for her is whether or not it's best to wait.
Whether she wants to be Pence.
Go for 2028. Yeah, whether she wants to take the risk of being Pence. You know, she proved herself. She was probably the shrewdest Trump appointee. I mean, she got out early and she got out smart. So she wasn't tainted in the way that others were. She managed to avoid his ire on the way out the door, preserving her optionality, you know, within the party that he dominates. So I don't know. That's a tough calculation. The other thing is that Trump could go down in a blaze here. And do you want to be, you know, sitting in the back seat?
Or, as you say, the democracy ends.
I mean, we will not be the same country if he wins. I think that's pretty clear. I mean, we already see, Al, you've been reading, I'm sure, with interest, his plans for, you know, demolishing the federal government and replacing it with an army of loyalists who will respond to him and not their oath.
Yeah, this is getting people like Jeffrey Clark.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's all through the government. You know, he's not going to bring General Mattis. He's going to bring General Flynn.
He's going to start where he ended. He's not going to start
where he started. Yeah, and, you know, it's very, very clear that he is on a vengeance tour here. And he's going to want to use the power of the federal government to seek reprisals on all of his political enemies. So I don't know where you fit on the list, Al, but
I think I'm pretty low on it at this point.
Yeah, I hope. Yeah. I
hope. Well, I hope that it doesn't come to that. And that's why we've got to win. And that's why you made a little bit of news this past week.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that in response to those head-to-head polls.
Yeah, it wasn't just in response to the polls, but it was also in response to what I thought has been kind of a conspiracy of silence about the magnitude of the challenge and the obstacles, the unique obstacles that we face. I think Joe Biden has done a great job, and I think he has accomplished things that will have generational importance.
Just on infrastructure, it's the biggest infrastructure package since Eisenhower.
Yes, and you know very, very well, because you were a lawmaker. Any president would have loved to have that. The climate investments, historic,
almost $400 billion. And that should be an enormous issue in this, especially with young people, and people have grandchildren like you and I.
And, you know, there are a series of things that, you know, the chips, the manufacturing bill is important and will pay dividends.
Semiconductor.
I mean, all of that. So that is not an issue to me. And I've said, if you gave me Joe Biden and lopped off 15 years, I despite the polls, I would have every confidence. But that's not where we're at. And it's a more competitive situation. This sort of what me worry kind of attitude, you know, calling people who have concerns bedwetters and so on.
Right.
I find offensive. I mean, there's too much at stake to be glib and kind of insulting about the whole thing. And so I felt like it was important to say what I said, which I said very carefully. I mean, I chose my words carefully. I am not in any way suggesting that anyone should challenge the president in a primary. I think he would win the nomination in any such race for those who were even considering it.
Do you see anybody, since that was a week ago that you wrote that, or last Sunday, actually, I guess.
Yeah. Feels like a week, yeah.
Yeah, it feels longer even, because there's been an off-year election where we did extremely well.
Yes.
I don't see anyone. Dean Phillips, of course, has...
You mean, do I see someone jumping in the race?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, the only thing that would change the situation is if the president himself decided, you know what? I think it's not in the best interest of the party and the country for me to move forward. You know, I don't see any indication that he is going to do that. And in some ways, you know, he's made it almost impossible because we are at such a late date here. But I do think that we should be sober about the nature of the challenge, and not just because, you know, Trump... I mean, how many times have we said, oh, he'll never get away with that?
Oh, yeah. I thought that once he starts getting indicted, boy, that'll be it. And now, and then I started thinking, okay, well, once he starts getting convicted, I do think in that poll, it did say he went down 6 points when people were asked if he was convicted.
Yes, I know. I did see that. And we'll see.
You see that?
We'll see that.
Only six?
This is an amazing situation. I mean, if you had said 10 years ago, if you had spelled out this scenario, people would have laughed or dismissed you out of hand. I mean, there is a chance, that is a non-trivial chance, that Donald Trump, given the court calendar and the election calendar, Donald Trump could clinch the nomination, become the nominee of the Republican Party on just about the very same day that he becomes a convicted felon for conspiring to overturn a free and fair election.
You can run for president from prison.
You can,
but that's why the Unabomber didn't do it.
Exactly. Yes, I know. But that was after careful consultation with a cadre of advisors.
Yes.
They're going to go to Milwaukee, and they may be lifting a convicted felon as their candidate. It's incredible. But when people just, let's even take the 6%. We were discussing this last night on CNN. You know, this guy, whatever you think of him, he does have a feral genius, you know, for manipulating the environment. And he understands the media at a very high level, and he is a first-class demagogue. And he will, he is already, I think 70% of the Republicans say, you know, these are politically motivated indictments. He was down in Florida last night telling a bunch of Cuban Americans that, you know, this is exactly what they did in your country. Corrupt leaders, you know, trumping up charges and throwing their political opponents in jail. And you know what? He got a really good response. The idea that it will take care of itself is not the case. And, you know, my hope in sort of saying what I said was to kind of snap people out of this kind of false casual sense about this whole thing. Yes, to get the president to reflect on it, but also what's very clear from this polling, unless something changes dramatically, and the biggest thing that's plaguing the president, he can't change. This president, like most presidents, cannot win a referendum. If he's asking for an up or down vote on his presidency, as great as his accomplishments might be, he's not going to win, even against Trump, especially with third party candidates involved, who will lower the ceiling. I mean, Trump's never got more than 46% of the vote, but if you've got a bunch of third-party candidates in there, 46% of the vote could be enough. So, you know, they've got to, in my view, very, very quickly and every day turn this into a comparative race and shine a big light on what's on the other side of the fence. You know, I thought spending the fall and a significant amount of money heralding the economy and branding it as Bidenomics was probably a mistake. I mean, his numbers didn't go up, they went down. But the bigger thing was, you can't jawbone people into feeling what they don't feel. And, you know, Al, you're a sophisticated marketer. If 75% of the public says the product isn't good, probably you don't want your name on it. You know, I just think they have to get a lot more aggressive. And well, he has limitations. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I say you were one of the masterminds of two victories for Obama. And in the second race against Romney, there were times where he was behind in the polls, and it was really up in the air. What advice do you have for Biden?
I mean, last week there was a piece that I'm sure you saw about how elaborately Trump and his allies are planning for a takeover of the government.
Yep.
I referenced it earlier. Mm-hmm. Like when stuff like that happens, why aren't they flooding the zone? I mean, why isn't that something that they're lifting up? Now, in defense of the president, we're in the middle of a hugely painful, consequential, and difficult situation in the Middle East right now, and that's been consuming him. But he has surrogates. I mean, like, why wasn't there an organized effort to really kind of raise that up? He's run ads on the pharmaceutical component of his...
Medicare can negotiate with on
yes.
certain drugs.
And Al, you know how long Democrats were fighting for that. And
Huge victory.
It happened. Yeah, so he was right to lift that up. But he missed the other half of the equation, which is that Donald Trump had 4 years to do anything about that, did nothing. And in fact, the Republicans want to repeal the bill that made that possible. You know what I mean? Turn this into a choice every opportunity you get. Don't shine the light on yourself. Shine the light on the choice and the opposition. And you can herald your accomplishments in the context of that. But the other half of the equation always has to be in the discussion. It's Joe Biden who has made popular the old Kevin White adage about don't compare me to the Almighty, compare me to the alternative. Boy, is this is this ever relevant here? Now, I will tell you that Trump will be operating under the same premise, and he'll try and do that. But as of now, he's been pretty successful at kind of allowing Biden to sort of have the spotlight himself. So I that's my main thing. And that's sort of what we did in 2011 and 2012. I mean, as you remember, things were not good in 2011. People were still feeling the effects of the recession, even though we were out of the recession. The aftershocks were big. We had come through that horrific debt ceiling battle that you remember. Obama's numbers were sort of at a nadir in the early fall. We kind of assumed from the beginning that Mitt Romney was going to be our opponent. And we knew that we couldn't win a race about if it's about who has the experience to run the macro economy. You know, Romney was a financier and he had good bona fides that way. And we changed the race to be about, you know, who's going to fight for the middle class, who's going to fight for you.
And you showed some of the stuff that his investment banking people
we defined him and we defined the race early and set it up early. And in this case, we didn't even have the opportunity. Romney still had to go through a primary, so we didn't really turn our attention to him until the spring. And let me just say parenthetically, I think Romney has shown himself to be a great American, he and I became friends after that election. You know, I admire him. So this is, I don't want to relitigate old campaigns here, but just as a strategic matter, you've got to define the race and you've got to define the opponent. You've got to define the stakes and you've got to define the opponent.
We're going to take a break for a moment. We'll be right back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
With Trump defining him as dangerous and as a threat to our very system of democracy, I think is the key, or a key, don't you?
Absolutely. I think that is a key. I think you need to do some work on the economic front because right now he's got a huge lead on the economy and who would best handle the economy. And the economy is very much the number one issue on people's minds. And while I think that the survival of democracy may supersede that in theory, in practice, and certainly in my mind and in your mind, but in practice, people vote on what is impacting on their lives. And so you can't just let him assert that their lives will be better if he returns. And you can't let them sit with gauzy kind of reflections of what they remember of the economy under Trump without talking about, you know, whose side was he on, really? You know what I mean? I think you have to engage in some other discussions in addition to the big discussion.
And that's a very complicated message to win, isn't it?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a tree you have to chop down and you have to take it piece by piece. I think the president's people believe what you said, which is that at the end of the day, the dangerousness of Trump and the threat to democracy will be enough to dissuade people and drive them to Biden. The third party thing worries me because these would be the two least liked candidates for president ever.
And Trump doesn't get over 46%. He just doesn't.
Right. The question is how close to 46 does he get and whether these third party options steal some of the votes from Biden. I shouldn't use the word steal in this context, but take some of the votes from Biden that he would otherwise have gotten, the grudging. I got concerns about Joe, but I just can't abide Trump. You know, if there is an option for those voters, will they take it? You know, I fear that it's more likely to work in Trump's benefit than Biden's, because obviously there are people who can't abide Trump who might vote for Biden. Those people, I worry will bleed away.
I mean, he has a ceiling problem, Trump.
Yes. So you lower the ceiling, and that puts him in play. It puts him in play. And you know, the thing that the unmentionable that I mentioned that is screaming out of these polls is the concern about age. And I mean, it was like my buddy Mike Murphy, with whom I do this Hacks on Tap podcast, said, you know, it's like a guy with antlers. It doesn't matter what else he does. People just keep staring at the antlers, you know, and this age issue is a real problem.
I think you wrote the greatest concern is that his biggest liability is the one thing that can't change.
Yes. Yeah. And that worries me. So it really, it just, if the decision is to move forward, and I think it is, then you have to recognize that and I think lean into the comparison. Don't try and turn it into a report card election. I mean, I think Biden's frustrated because he's not getting his due for leading the country through the pandemic, for the ways in which the economy has repaired itself. I don't think they've been sufficient.
The way he got shots in people's arms after the Trump people just completely dropped the ball on that and saved a lot of lives.
Yes. You know, the age thing has obliterated a lot of that because people, they just don't credit him with being a man of action, even though he's on so many fronts has been and produced results. But all I'm saying is, forget about getting your due, okay? That history will take care of that. Just start running a really, really tough comparative election. You know, you talk about the threats to democracy, Alan, that should be, and the danger of Trump. That's why, like, when you get a story like you got last week to basically demolish civil service and bring in an army of loyalists to run the government and seek retribution against his enemies, that is sort of at the heart of the matter. But how much amplification did you hear from the Democratic Party?
You know, there is a cartoonish aspect to Trump that they need to be making fun of. For example, he keeps saying, have you heard this on the stump? He keeps saying, I'm the only one who can prevent World War III.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically he's saying, if I'm not president, You're dead. Not only are you dead, your family's dead.
Yeah.
And the entire world
is over.
So you
think that's what, hyperbolic?
I think it's in the crazy area.
Yes, crazy, I think, is apt here.
And there's a really good case to say this guy cannot be our president. I mean, forget the,
yes,
let alone the anti-democratic stuff, and let alone
yeah. But you know what?
Those people.
You know what haunts me? You know what haunts me? The old Bill Clinton adage that strong and wrong always beats weak and right. Now, I don't like the implications of that. You know, I don't like. I wouldn't give it to people as, you know, strong and right is kind of the sweet spot you should shoot for. But his point is not wrong. If people. The Republican message, Al, that Biden has to defeat is that the world is in chaos and he's not in command. That's where the race sits now. Too much the race sits there now. And so, you know, the fear, you know, you have is that people fall into that line of thinking that Trump's an asshole, he's a little nuts, but he's strong. I mean, in the CNN poll that came out Tuesday, one of the numbers that I found really astonishing, and I think this is how it was phrased, but you know, they asked about qualities of each candidate, who is best suited to provide strong leadership in the world, and Trump had a 12-point lead on that. I mean, that is freaking absurd. I asked whether they had been polling like Kim Jong-un, but that is just a surrogate for strength,
right? And he will say that I will end the war in Ukraine in one day.
Yes, and he will say, we didn't have these problems when I was president. We didn't have, you know, Russia wasn't in Ukraine. Of course, they were, but they hadn't invaded in the way that they did. I mean, you can see what he's going to say. And it's bullshit, you know. I think that the world is watching this race with trepidation, other than perhaps I don't even know about the Chinese, you know, but you know, Putin may be happy. I think he's sort of hanging around, hope in this war in Ukraine, hoping to keep the stalemate until Trump can come and rescue him. But I'm just saying, this guy has to be contested every day. And yes, he says stupid shit out there every day. You know, he was on the stand here in New York this week and said he didn't know about these financial statements from 2021 because he was busy being president and dealing with Russia and China, and the lawyer had to remind him that he wasn't president in 2021.
He was president for part of January.
That's true. And, you know, in his mind, he was president then and still president and probably therefore entitled to classified documents. But the point is, he wasn't president. And he says stuff all the time. The Republicans have made a meme of Biden gaffes and, you know, all of that stuff. But, you know, Trump fill volumes with those.
So what ads do you make? How do you respond to this?
Well, first of all, I test the ads that I make because you want to make sure that every one of them flies straight and true and hits the target that you're intending and has the impact that you're intending. But, you know, I mentioned one. I would take, if in the interest of sort of putting the pill in the applesauce and getting people to swallow it, I would take these Biden accomplishments and contrast them with Trump. I'm not saying there's not time to do some of this, but I think you've got to start setting these discussions up over a long period of time. I certainly would look into an ad about these stories, about his plans. And I think his own words, talking about executing, General Milley and some of those things, you know, I would certainly see about
that was because General Milley went to the Chinese, his Chinese counterpart, and said, this is after Trump lost the election, and said, don't worry, I'm on top of it if our president wants to attack you. And then he said Milley should be executed for that, for treason.
Yes, yeah. But, I mean, he says stuff like that all the time, so... If your storyline is the one that you propose, Alan, I think is, you know, a central concern or should be a central concern for people, then when things happen, at least in targeted ways that create discussion, even if they're viral ads online, you want to go after it. I think, like I said, this is going to be like chopping down a tree, and you don't want to start chopping too late. You want to start chopping right from the beginning, setting up comparatives and attacks, you know, and when he gives you opportunities, you need to take them.
It seems to me that with what's going on in the Middle East and Ukraine and in the world, that we have a very serious world to deal with. And to draw the contrast with a sober, serious leader and someone who is just off the rails is a way to go.
Yeah, it is. But I would test it because here's the problem you run into. Here's the problem you run into. Here's the problem you run into. And, you know, this is the obstacle right now. They have painted the picture and the public has received it. Or large numbers of people that Biden is not up to this. You can say, well, you got a sober, serious leader. They will say you have a leader who is not aware. I mean, in this CNN poll, 25% of people said that Biden had the stamina and sharpness to be president. So, you know, that's their answer to the sober and serious leader thing. So you got to kind of think about, well, how do we defeat that? How do we navigate that? How do we defeat that?
And how do you? You've made ads.
Well, that's why this has to be in a comparative frame. I think you can offer, I mean, the guy has a host of things that he's gotten done that bespeak action. But you can't offer them, I think, absent the comparative. And I put everything into a comparative frame. But you can't let that be the issue, I guess, is what I'm saying. And Al, I'm not sitting here with reams of research, and so I can't be prescriptive as to language, but I just and I wouldn't, you know. I mean, as it is, I was in this job, okay, and he's got really smart people around him. They're more than competent. Some of them are brilliant. All of them I've worked with. So there's nothing more irritating when you're in those jobs than badass retirees like me, throwing out, genius ideas from the sidelines that may or may not have value. I get all that. And that's part of the reason why I've been a little more muted. But man, I just have a sense of urgency about this. And everybody should have a sense of urgency about this. And that's my fundamental message.
Well, thanks, David. Thanks for, I know you're traveling today, and thanks for doing me this favor.
Well, Al Franken, you are a great American, and you were a great public servant, and you weren't a bad comedian either, by the way, and you still aren't. But
still not bad.
You were a stellar member of the United States Senate, and every American benefited from your presence there and your passion and your insight and brilliance.
Ah, shucks.
I'm honored to be on your podcast.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me,
DJ Fu,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Once Upon a Beat.
The early 2000s was a wild time for reality TV. There seemed to be an endless supply of shows that delivered entertainment for us, but trauma for children. I'm Misha Brown, the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Each week on The Big Flop, comedians join me to chronicle the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question, who thought this was a good idea? We recently looked behind the scenes of what was really going on at Abby Lee Miller's dance studio. Abby's biggest misstep wasn't screaming nonsensical catchphrases or throwing chairs on television, but instead, she was choreographing financial fraud in plain sight. Join me to break down all the wild details of Abby Lee Miller's story. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.